Okay, so last week with your parents, we started discussing the one particular part of the Egla Arufa Suya, right, which is the Adinu Lo Shafchu Et Adam Hazeh. We saw three perspectives, as we talked about, can shed light on wider perspectives. I really did enjoy, I should have mentioned it last week, but I started thinking about this after a short Dvar Torah by my longtime chavrusa, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zuckier. And then we had a follow-up discussion. He didn't focus too much on the Rashi position, but we had a good back and forth email discussion about this, which helped me sharpen my ideas on this sugya. Hello, Shua. So the first thing I wanted to do was Reb David Tzvi Hoffman, because I think Reb David Tzvi Hoffman has a very important methodological point that I wanted to make sure that you have seen before you leave yeshiva, okay? And that is the following. We have this, there's a big problem in Yerushalmi reading, a massive problem in Yerushalmi reading, which is that most people read the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli, because they know the Bavli better. You're all like, yes, sure, we know the Bavli better than the Yerushalmi. I mean, relatively speaking, sure. But often, the Mefarshim on the earlier Mefarshim, the Yerushalmi, or the classic ones on the page, Kamban Eda, Pnei Moshe, read the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli.
Well, your team says that
sometimes, I mean, sometimes they will, sometimes they won't, especially when there's ambiguity, they will tend to read the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman here moves away from that. In this particular case, I actually think it was warranted to read the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli, but Rav David Tzvi Hoffman wants to let you know that he doesn't think that's true, right? That he thinks it is legitimate to read the Yerushalmi independently of the Bavli, including the Yerushalmi's attribution of the Bavli's position to Bavel, right? Because if you remember, the Yerushalmi says that Yadinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh, there is a machloket Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel, they say it's talking about lo patru, the murdered victim. And in Eretz Yisrael, we say it's about the murderer, right? In Eretz Yisrael, we say that they should have cracked down more on crime, that's what we should have dealt with. And in Bavel, they say you should have taken care of the victim. Right, and then we talked about whether Rashi assumes that the victim is also a criminal or not. Right, that's Rashi's addition here. But we took it as a given that the Yerushalmi is quoting the same tradition that we have in the Bavli. Yeah. Then at the end of last week, we saw that the Malbim already doesn't seem to think that the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are at odds, right, because he splits the difference. Right, and he says half the phrase is about how we treated the victim, and half of it is how we treated the criminal. Right, already creating a hybrid position. But Rav David Tzvi Hoffman methodologically believes that not only should we not assume that you understand the Bavli in light of the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli, you shouldn't even understand the Yerushalmi's traditions that it attributes to Bavel in light of the Bavli, because who says that the tradition that they knew from Bavel is the same as the tradition we know from Bavel? It's possible there are two traditions in Bavel, right? There are multiple traditions in Bavel and many other things. Why should it be? Now, in this particular case, I'm not sure I'm convinced, right? But the David Tzvi Hoffman is convinced and therefore creates yet another level of interpretation in our Gemara, okay? I will point out that the Netziv has a knack for this type of reading as well. Though not Bavli Yerushalmi. The Netziv has this knack for looking at the Gemara and saying the Gemara seems to say there are two positions, but there's a hidden third position that you didn't realize is in between the lines. He has a knack for this. He does this a lot. Rami already, he doesn't even know what David Tzvi Hoffman said, and he's like, I don't like it. I reject it, prima facie. All I said was I wanted to see this position because of the methodological point. Let me try this again, Rami. The Yerushalmi is written 100 years before the Bavli. Oh, okay. In the time of the Yerushalmi, there is a tradition floating around in Bavel. Yeah. We tend to assume, and probably correctly, that the tradition we know in the Bavli is the same as the tradition that was floating around in Babel 100 years ago and attributed to the Bavli by the Yerushalmi. Not to the Bavli. Attributed to Babel. Right, this is probably where you're getting confused. The Yerushalmi doesn't say the Bavli says X. It says the people in Babel say X. But the people in Babel are 100 years before the Bavli. So we assume that if we have a tradition that sounds sort of like what the Yerushalmi says is a tradition in Babel, that our Gemara is the same. But it's not...
This is making me wonder, like, is there ever a situation where the Bavli says, that in the...
Yes, of course, the Marava.
No, or where they say that here we hold such an accent in...
Yes.
In the Y, but then in the Yerushalmi says in
So yes. Of course we have cases, but remember, it's a little bit different to do it in this direction. It's easier to do what Rav Tzvi Avin is about to do from the Yerushalmi to the Bavli, because the Bavli is written later. It's harder from the Bavli to the Yerushalmi, because if the Bavli is quoting a tradition, Bimarava, right, that's more likely to be the tradition that's actually reflected in the Yerushalmi, right, because the Yerushalmi is written first, right? So if there's a position in the Bavli attributed to Amshei Eretz Yisrael, right, Bimarava, and a similar position appears in the Yerushalmi, that's probably the tradition they knew. Right? Probably. Okay. So Rav David Tzvi Hoffman writes as follows. He says, Shnei pirushim mitkavnim lefaresh yadenu v'einenu shebekatuv. The goal of both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi is to understand whose hands did, right? Whose eyes, and what did they not spill, and what did they not see, right? This is the goal. The Feirush Yerushalmi, Yodenu Perusho Rashlanut Bimaseh Yideihem. The Hainu Sherotzeach Lo Bali Adam Uvachu Machmat Rashlanut. Right, the Yerushalmi says, our hands were not weak when we were grabbing hold of the murderer. Yes? Einenu Perusho Ivud Hadin. Einenu means that we didn't divert justice. Right, we didn't distort justice. You know, we didn't see that he was guilty, and you know, play with the court system and end up letting him go. Right, shaloka halacha, against the halacha. Right, remember, we saw this. We were tough on crime. We didn't let him go. We didn't overlook his guilt in the court system and let him go. Correct. You'd have to deal with this. Remember, the Gemara in Makom Dav Zayin. Correct. The Gemara in Makom Dav Zayin says that, right? Ilo yinu b'Sanhedrin, lo yinu again Adam mi'amav. But what's the response? Ava yinu, right? Ava yidem arbet shorov chedamim b'Yisrael. Right? Meaning this could be a related machloket to that machloket in Makot as to whether the ideal is that the court never puts anyone to death or... No, if you don't put anyone to death, then you're going to lead to, right, more murderers, right? So, yes, it is possible that this machloket about whether we say that the way to prevent crime is to be tough on crime, that could be subject to whether you think we should really be tough on crime or we should avoid at least capital punishment at all costs. Right? It's possible that machloket is in the background. Yes, it's Makot Dav Zayin. Yes. But then he says this shocking claim. Aval ha-Talmud ha-Bavli ha-cholek al-Pirush zeh savur. The Bavli disagrees. Shebeidin ha-Bodero zeh lo-Kadin He said, first of all, we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week. But he says, what is the machloket between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi? Why would you say that the difference is whether we were tough on crime or whether we didn't take care of the victim? Why would you take that approach? So David Tzvi Avin starts by pushing it further, and he says, there's a fundamental machloket here, which is being, right, not convicting someone a plausible reason to be considered a partner in murder? Right? Meaning the Yerushalmi is not just saying that you have to exact justice. It's that if you don't exact justice, you would say about that court, Shavchu et Adam Hazeh. But that's an interesting claim, because as Yosef correctly notes, there are many positions in Chazal who think we should try to avoid capital punishment, which means that we're not looking to carry out the full extent of the law. Or let me give you a modern mashal. If a court finds someone not guilty because they think he probably murdered, but they can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, so they are bound by law to let him off, even though they might think that he murdered. And yet, on balance, we think that's a better legal system, because we think the bar of beyond a reasonable doubt is a plausible standard to set to make sure that innocent people don't get convicted. But if we now read the Bavli Yerushalmi into this, you'd have to say that if the people thought that, you know, it was 60% that he probably murdered him, but it's not beyond a reasonable doubt, they could see it the other way, 40%. So in American law, you'd have to let him go. And on balance, we think it's a good thing that our system is like that, right? There's a presumption of innocence. You need to prove guilt. It really wouldn't sit well with us if we said that when they let that person off and he goes kills again, it's the jury's fault. That's what they're supposed to do. So when we believe that the court is not supposed to put people to death, it's very hard to say that if they didn't put the murderer to death when he was there before because they couldn't prove he was guilty, that they're responsible for that. Alkein Tereshit Kavanat HaMishnah Shizgimor Mimshal Garmu Limitat Doshal Naraga Yidesh Lo Azru LaLechazek Haroi. And that's why the Bavli says that we're only responsible if we didn't take care of the victim. Okay, so first of all, that's a very sharp point by Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, right? Rav David Tzvi Hoffman said point one is the reason you wouldn't say like the Yerushalmi, that the reason you're responsible for this murder is because you weren't tough enough on crime, that only works if the system isn't programmed to not want you to be as tough as possible on crime. But the system is programmed for you to have a presumption of innocence. If that's the case, you can't, you know, that's actually one of the great things about our system, right? Is there's actually a pasuk, v'hitzilu et ha'eda, right? V'shaftu et ha'eda, v'hitzilu et ha'eda. You're supposed to try to save him, right? Or let me give you a theoretical that I think will really bring it home, right? Let's say it's so obvious that the guy is guilty that all 23 judges say that he's guilty and should be put to death. So what's the halacha? You don't kill him. So how are you going to say that it's their fault that they let him off? They all thought he was guilty, and they did their best to convict him, but the Torah says that if you all convict him, then he's innocent. And in fact, the Gemara says that if one of them, if Judge 23 sees what's going on, and he says, Gevalt, if I judge and say that he's guilty, then he's going to get off the hook, so I'm going to say he's innocent so that he'll get killed, right? That judge is violated Nisr, because he's supposed to speak his, right? He's supposed to say what he thinks the truth is, even if the result will be the opposite of what he wants. Right? So it's very hard to actually take the Yerushalmi's position. So that's from David Chavavin's first defense of the Bavli, of why the reason that we should say that you're responsible is because you didn't take enough care of the victim, rather than you weren't tough enough on crime, which is the system doesn't want you to be that tough on crime. That's point one. Then his second chiddush is what I said with my introduction. He says, Amnam, a dayanish machloket bin habavli vayirushalmi bidat rabbeinu shebibavel gufa. He thinks there's a machloket between the Bavli and what Yerushalmi attributes to the Chachmei Bavel in their time. But Talmud Bavli pershu sheyadenu haynu matan mizonot haminitanim biyad. Ve'einenu haynu shira'uhu b'makom sakana v'azruhu b'lo levaya. The Bavli says that yadenu refers to not giving him food, and einenu applies means that we didn't see him in danger and not escort him. Right, that's the Bavli. B'Yerushalmi v'divrei batenu sh'b'bavel b'inyan acher. But the Yerushalmi flips it. Yadenu refers to livaya, right, refers to escorting, and einenu to mizonot. Yadenu hainu livaya, shalobali yadenu, klomar lirshutenu. Meaning, he didn't come to us and we didn't let him go. And therefore, we didn't have to escort him. And we didn't see him, refers to food. So already, right, he knows there is a difference. Yadeinu ve'einenu. Now, you might say, who cares? In the end of the day, the Chachmei Bavel or the Bavli say, the reason you're responsible is you didn't take care of him. But already, when you note that little nuance, there is a difference. Which is, Yadeinu sounds like the person was already with us. Right? Einenu, we saw him, could imply that we didn't pursue something. Right? Because it's at a distance. Which means that Yadeinu, if Yadeinu is Levaya, that means he was with us and we didn't not escort him. But if he was not with us, then we wouldn't have a responsibility. We don't have to seek him out. But Einenu, if it refers to food, means when it comes to food, you got to seek him out. If you see him, give him food. If you flip it, that means Einenu is Levaya. That means even if we see that he's in danger, we have to actively go and escort him, right, and protect him, right? So those are nuances, right? Are you, look, you see him in danger, you have to go and protect him? Or was he with you and you didn't provide protection as he was leaving? Those are different bars. And therefore he says, miniyat mizonot hu agarem l'shichut damim. Not having the food is what caused him to die or to be killed. Perish Rashi. Rashi had said, Shani she'en lo mizonot milasem en abriot. He said that the murder victim was actually a criminal himself, was trying to get food. L'chora pirus et dachuk. He said, I don't buy that. That's just wrong. He said, so what do I think it is? Nir'e l'faresha ha'ani mevakesh mechiyato nodeid l'mkomot mirachokim min ha'yishuv v'alul lipol b'dirotzeach. A person who's starving to death will go anywhere to find food. V'adayin sarich be'ur l'divrei ha'tamur ha'bavli. Okay, so now what does the Bavli want? Why does this what they have to say? She says, V'yesh Lomar says, Kenim he rasheya ir, shekol tzarcheya ir, mutalin alehem. Because the Bet Din are responsible for all things that happen in the community. As people my share know, right, they're responsible to set up social welfare. They take care of people's food. But Beit Din sounds like we're talking not of them as leaders, but as judges. And Patranu, he says, is like Rabbeinu Shebetzal, ki lefeirus Rabbeinu Shebavel, ikar ashma eino ha-pitarnu, ela ha-bilomazon. Right? The word pitarnu sounds not like we didn't give him food, but that we let him go. So the main part isn't there. So what he points out is that there is this nuance, right? That the Yerushalmi, what motivates the Yerushalmi for him is the fact that we're talking about the Beit Din, that the Mishnah talks about the Beit Din, which sounds like them as judges rather than leaders. And that's why they think it's about crime, right? But he says the problem with them is that the Yerushalmi's assumption must be that you're supposed to push crime and criminal enforcement to its limit, which is not obvious. And therefore, the Bavli has to assume that it's Beit Din in their role, not as Beit Din, but as leader, which is a little bit hard, because it sounds like them in their judicial role. And then he says there is this nuance that, yes, both the Chachmei Bavel in the Yerushalmi and the Bavli both think that it's not taking care of him, but the question is the extent to which you're responsible. In the Bavli, again, he says, right, if Yadenu is food and Einenu is Livaya, it sounds like it needs to be more proactive. Or, no, it has to be not the opposite. It has to be preventative, right? That if we, I said that wrong again. One more time. In the Bavli, the way he understands it, if Yadenu is food and Einenu is danger, it's reactive, right? The main problem is the food, is that we didn't give him food. We caused him to wander. Einenu is we're not responsible. I mean, we are responsible to escort him. But what we're saying is we didn't see him in danger and fail to respond. In Chachmei Bavel, if Yadenu is Levaya, he says it's flipped. It's he wasn't with us, right? We have to, right? In the Bavli, we didn't respond. We didn't fail to respond when we saw him in danger. The Chachmei Bavel and the Yerushalmi say, no, he was with us and we didn't provide him with protection. This is what Yosef was saying last week, right? There's really the nuance here, right? That the way the Bavli imagines it is, what the Chachmei Bavel in the Yerushalmi say is that we didn't have him in our protection and provide him with a police escort, right? That's our responsibility. And if we, right, and they're saying we didn't fail in that. In the Bavlis, no, we didn't see him in danger and fail to save him. That's very different, right? And on the flip side, the food, there also seems to be that difference. That if food is Yadenu, right, that means that we had him, we didn't fail to give him food. If you think that the food is the Einenu, that means we're responsible to, at some level, pursue and find people to give them food so that they aren't in that situation. So the question is, what is, right, proactive? What is responsive here? There is that nuance between the version of the Bavli and the Chachmei Bavel. And so that's Rav David Tzvi Hoffman's analysis, which I think, whether or not you're convinced of it, is a fascinating, very careful read of the differences between them. Okay. Fine. So, three more perspectives here. Rav Hirsch. Okay? Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says, at first glance, I would have accepted Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. Because, now, Rav Hirsch says, okay, what is the benefit of the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael over the Bavli? Why would you think that this story is more about our responsibilities towards the criminal, right, or treating the criminal, or dealing with the criminal, than towards the victim? So that's from David Tzvi Hoffman's point, right? We're talking about Beit Din. He has a different point.
I think it's
why?
Because, are you expected to go, every single person that comes?
Okay, so you can have that. But he has a very, within the Pesukim, there's a very easy reason why he likes Chachmei Eretz Yisrael at first glance. And that is? Right, I mean, and what do we say? Lo nodam mihi kohu. The whole thing is we don't know who murdered him. Right? We're talking about, right, we didn't kill him. Someone else killed him. You're talking about, right, there. You could read it both ways, but there is a little bit of a netiyah to say it's about the murderer, because you're saying we don't know who killed him, but it wasn't us, right? And he says, you measure to figure out where is it most likely the murderer came from, right? He says, that's his first glance, but he says, okay, so then, if that motivates Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, then what motivates Chachmei Bavel to say that the responsibility of Beit Din is because they didn't take care of the victim? So he says, okay, here's what he thinks. He says, you have to be very careful. It's true that what motivates the whole parsha is you don't know the murderer. But what motivates the speech? Right? I think this is a very subtle point. What motivates Egla Arufa is we don't know the murderer. What motivates the speech? No. Yadeinu lo shavchu et adam hazeh. The speech, right? The whole story is because you don't know who murdered. But the speech is on the dam hazeh. This is a very sharp point by him, right? He says, that he thinks is the machloket, that the Yerushalmi is focusing on the story, is we get into this, we don't know who the murderer is. But the Bavli is focusing on the speech, right? Which says, Yadinu lo shavchu et adam hazeh, their guilt has something to do with this blood.
Yeah, so it's not
exactly. right? That they're mitarim ashmana shutafut lepesha. Anybody mitarim ashmana shelimu neim arotzeach. Said, what would give you the idea in yadinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh that you say our problem was we didn't hide our eyes from the murderer and we weren't strict enough in court. That's not what you say. You don't say we didn't let the murderer off. You say we didn't spill this blood. Right? You're talking about the blood. You're talking about the guy who's dead. The murdered victim. So he thinks that's the nuance, right? That the Bavli is focusing on the words, the speech, Yadeinu lo shafchu, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, which is a plausible interpretation of why there's such a thing as Egla Arufa. But then he goes farther and he says, okay, well now once we have that, now let's understand what's going on here. He said, Egla Arufa Oseg Mekresh Arugu Sh'ar Kamot Shinafal Kach Hushmu HaShiltonot L'Lag. He said, what's clearly going on here is the fact that we have to bring the courts here is because the government is currently an object of scorn in this society, right? Because, right, we know this, right? There's rampant crime and no one can bring them to justice, right? People turn to the politicians and say, you're not doing a good enough job. That's what's going on. There's a murdered body in the middle of the road. Right? And everyone is like, yeah. And they're saying, wow, this is ineffective government and ineffective police and ineffective whatever. He says, however, even though everyone's gossiping about it, as Sean says, he says, yesh rak mikre echad shoto lagu mutzdeket bemet. Gossip is gossip, but there's one time in which the gossip is correct. That it's right to put all the blame on the shoulders of the leaders of the community. When is that? Hamikresh Aruga Yoshemi Tsukama Shmachel Tonadeir, when the government was responsible for the dire situation the person was in. Right? If you think about it, right? No one says that the initial deaths from coronavirus are the government's fault. Because the initial deaths, no one knew what it was. Right? People start accusing the government when they can say you didn't do enough. That's when someone starts pointing to the government. Right? The very fact that someone dies a tragic death is not always the government's fault. But when the government doesn't do what it's supposed to, then it really is, then you really, yadeinu shafchu, right? And now he follows Rashi, and he says, yeah, if you leave people starving in the street, and they have no choice but to be Aladdin, right, and then be chased by the guards, right, who try to kill him for stealing an apple with his, monkey or whatever, right? 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 We all sympathize with Aladdin in that story, right? Whether or not he's halachically justified, right? Right? We all sympathize with Aladdin. We're happy that he becomes the prince, and whatever. I hope you do. I don't know. Otherwise, it's not a fun movie to watch, right? No, I like Jafar. Jafar is who I like, right? Yes. Fine. And he says, and now he pushes it. And he pushes Rashi and he says, let me tell you why in Rashi's conception of this, the government is to blame. Now let's be careful. Why do you think? This is also a very sharp read. Again, this is a little bit more nuanced than what we talked about last week. But Rav Hirsch says, why in Rashi's conception of this story? Right? That the guy is basically Aladdin, and he has no choice but to steal food, and then he gets killed, right? End of movie, right? Much more tragic movie than we have, right? No genie, no nothing, right? They cut off his head right then and there, right? I know that I can cut off his hands, cut off his arms, I know, his hands, I got it. I understand. Whatever. Okay? Why in that case is the government responsible? And this is an amazing read of Rashi. Why does Rashi come up with a convoluted case? Right? Why didn't Rashi just say the simple pshat? That the reason the court is responsible is because there was someone starving to death, and therefore he wandered in a dangerous place. Why did Rashi have to say that the person was starving and therefore tried to steal and got killed in the process of trying to steal food? Why does Rashi come up with such a convoluted case? So Rav Hirsch says something brilliant. He says, because in that case, the victim isn't guilty, but the murderer isn't really guilty either. Because the victim was robbing him. Right? The victim and the murderer were both victims. The victim was starving to death and therefore was desperate, so he stole food. But at the end of the day, right, this is a deserted road in between two cities, and he tries to rob someone. Yes, he's desperate, but the person who killed him might not have known that. Right? He might not have known that if he just gave him a loaf of bread, the guy would go away. Right? So Rav Hirsch says, why does Rashi come up with his case? Because Rashi asked himself the question, why is this the government's fault? Why is it the leader's fault? And Rashi comes up with an answer. If the government didn't take care of the poor and drove them to desperation, and in their desperation they tried to steal food and got caught up in it, then the victim is not really guilty, but because the situation drove him to crime, the person who killed him was also a victim. So maybe he reacted too harshly. But at the end of the day, the victim is a highway robber in between two cities. Yes, he's trying to steal food. In that case, Rav Hirsch says, Rashi looked at it and said, in what case does all the onus fall on the Beit Din? If they create a situation of desperation where the victim can't really be blamed because he was starving to death, but the murderer can't really be blamed because he thought he was acting in self-defense correctly or incorrectly, then it's society's fault. Because they've created an untenable reality. Right? Which is, I think, a brilliant read of how Rashi gets to his very complex read, which is that the victim is also a criminal. Because he says, in that case, it's the pshiyara shiltonot. Yisharu tekman tukatot and asr tzoch kogadei maaseh shod. I skipped. He says, "Ash me mima have dinim and shulzano to erche limo name and tukara harug will kimen a chova and odav yirichol emar gam yachzor tzef shara shulzano nishara tzef and tukadosh and after tzok how could they matzeh showed?" He said they're responsible for both acts of crime, right? For what the murderer did and what the victim did. Then society has to come out. And the bodily just chooses to talk about where the murder victim is the one that was in pain. And he says, that's what Yadeinu Lo Shafchu means. We were part of this. We alone, the government, the society, are the only ones really responsible. Because at some level, neither the victim nor the murderer are responsible. We are. That's what Rashi is getting at. Right, Rashi's understanding where the Bavli is that the government comes out and says, we don't create a situation in which people are so desperate that the only thing they can do is resort to crime. That's the statement. Right? That's the statement. So like I said, you know, this would have been hard last week with your parents, right? Like, on that share, like, this detail. But both of these are very sharp points, right? So, again, Hirsch's two points are, what drives the Yerushalmi seems to be the fact that we're looking for the murderer, and that's why the focus is on the murderer. The Bavli, what drives it is that it's Yadinu Lo Shafchu Et Adam Hazeh, is that we're talking about culpability for the victim. His second point is, why does Rashi come up with this case where the victim is also criminal? And his answer is because we're looking for a case in which the onus is completely on society, on the government. And that's when you drove people to crime such that the victim and the aggressor were both somewhat justified in what they did, and the violence was a function of a failed society. Then the court has to come in and say, well, really a flip, we didn't do that. Because if we did that, it really would be our fault and not the victim's and not the aggressor. Right, not a murderer. And Beis Din has to say that is not what happened. Right, that's Rav Hirsch's very, very brilliant read. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, what he adds to this discussion is, as we saw, is the question of which is Yadenu and which is Einenu. Right, is it that we assume that the Yadenu is proactive or reactive? Right? Is it that he was with us and proactively we sent him with a police escort, and if not, we're responsible? Or that we saw him in danger, we didn't react? And same with food. Are we responsible to be actively providing those food so they don't end up desperate, or only react when they're with us, we didn't hand them the food when they actually came to us? Right? That's the nuance that Rabbi Hoffman sees here. And again, going back to what we talked about last week, you see how, right, we can really deepen the political conversation when you realize, right, when you start pushing the nuances of what's going on here. Right? It provides so much language to talk about exactly the extent of the different responsibilities. Okay, two last points. Two last insights in the sugya, one from the Meiri and one from the Maharal. So the Meiri says as follows. Amar HaMeiri, Zikneo To'airu Ruchasinit Yidehem Makom HaRifara Agla, the judges wash their hands, Perish Beidin Sheba, Ugdolei HaMechabrim Kadlu HaBeitin, and Kol HaSkenim Sheba Ir, Afilo in Meya. It's all the sages. Doesn't matter how big the Beit Din is. Not a representative Beit Din. Everybody comes. Everybody shows up. Right? Meaning, that makes sense. Right? This is not symbolic. This is, everyone shows up. And then they say in Hebrew, what does it mean? He says, we didn't give up on him at all. We in no way were responsible. He said, Yadena Lushavchu isn't just, we weren't directly responsible. He said, what is the upshot of this whole sugya? That the court has to be able to say with integrity, we didn't give up on him. We did not take care of him. In no way, shape, or form can you construe that we're responsible. That's the point, right? You have to tease it out. But what it's saying is, there are many direct ways you could have been responsible. But the chiddush is that you're expected to be responsible in all the indirect ways too. And they can only say, Yadena lo shafchu, they lived up to that. Shim tomer lo shafchu mamash. Because if you want to say they didn't murder, as the Gemara says, v'chi al tal da'adin is v'gnei beidin shal chedamim in, we don't think the beidin was an actual murderer. But, I mean, I'll give you a mashal again, right? Sorry, I'll get political, but, right? Just think about it, right? People, this is how people talk about Corona, right? Trump is responsible for the death of, right? Right, that's what they say. Or, you want me to, right, be equal on both sides of it. Cuomo is responsible for the death of. De Blasio is responsible for the death of, okay? We've got some Democrats, Republicans, everyone's responsible. Great. Okay, right? Shockingly, believe in every single one of the statements I just said, right? Maybe, possibly. Anyways, I may or may not believe everything I just said, but, you know, that's not the point. Okay. That's one point from the Meiri, right? That the thrust, in the end of the day, we should walk away from this, is that the Gemara holds you to a much higher standard than did you directly kill people, right? That's not how the government, the Torah conceptualizes the responsibility of the government or society. It's your responsibility as the type of government who can say, in no way, shape, or form did I possibly contribute to this, not in the terms of the way I structure society, not in the way I take care of the poor, nothing, right? That's the upshot of what you're supposed to learn from this Gemara, right? However you take it, that's the number one insight. That's the meaning. Maharal, last point. Lo pitranu belo levaya. Shukal she'enu melavek yilu shoveich damim. He says, because anyone who does an escort, the Gemara says, like a murderer. He says, perish that. What does this mean? Ki kocha adam u'yoter kasher hutoch klal b'nei adam. So what is it? What is the obsession in the Gemara about levaya? Why do we say we would that what would have protected him is escorting him? So here's what he adds to the discussion. He says, people's strength comes from being as part of a group. Then they have the power of community. וכאשר האדם הוא יחידי נפרד, יש לקוח פרטי, ואז פגים פוגם בו. When he's alone, he's vulnerable. ולכך, כאשר מלווין אותו, כאשר נפרד מן הבריאות ומניחן אותו לצאת עד שיר מיל, and therefore when you escort him as he leaves, או משהו הלוויה, שאפשר להם להיות תמיד עמו, צריכים להיות בביתם. So you don't take him forever, right? We say for a meal. But why would that, right? Maral says, the Gemara goes on to tell you, you don't have to escort him forever. You have to escort him a meal. But wait a second. What if it's 10 mil between cities? Isn't he in danger? Right? We don't make you go with him to the next city. We don't make you go to the next city. You have to go home at some point. So the Maral says, wait a second. It can't be, like Yosef wanted to say, that we provided a police escort or didn't provide a police escort. Because you don't have to. You don't take him to the next city. So then the Maral turns around and says, then what exactly is the benefit of us escorting him to begin with? He said, the goal here wasn't to protect him. It's attitude. If you walk him out of the city, he knows he's not alone. Right? That you cared him. You walked him a mil. You walked him what you could. And now he gets all metaphysical. And he says, and when someone connects the community, so God protects him. Right? This is very metaphysical, but that's how he reads it. But when you leave him alone, he is an individual. It's as if he's not part of society. So he doesn't have society or the metaphysical protections that come from being society, whatever that means. אמרו בסמך שכל שאשר מלאב אין אותו אינם ניזוק. שר הלוויה מורשו תוך הכלל. And that's what it means. That if you escort him, he's part of the group. וכאשר תוך הכלל, and when he's part of the group, אף עליון מלאבים אליו, אשר אינם ניזוק, אשר תוך הכלל. God sends his, right, the power of the community to protect him. Now again, I don't know what that means metaphysically. Oh God. I don't want to get into that. Right? אבל אם אין לו אבנו גילו שובר דמים, כי באמת הוא שערי כל אדם תוך הכלל. And he says, that's the problem. Now again, I think you could reformulate him in not a metaphysical way, which is to say the point is, right, we know this is true, right? Let me give you a modern version of this, right? Which is, someone is less likely to be mugged if he's talking on the phone with somebody, even though the person on the phone may be hundreds of miles away and not be able to protect them. The very fact that the mugger sees the person's on the phone and is connected to someone else makes them come across as less vulnerable. Right? It's true. Right? It's not, right, you can't necessarily be with someone all the time. But when people feel like they're alone and other people perceive them that they're alone, right, they're in more danger. And when people perceive them as not alone, right, they're safer even if no one's practically with them. Right, so you could say it metaphysically as a moral thing, but you could also say it psychologically, right, that if people are taking care of him, then he's more confident and he's less likely to be the type of person that, right, we know this, right, if you look alert and you look confident, people are less likely to mess with you, right, if you look dejected and you look out of it, you're a more likely victim. So there's psychological rationale here also. Okay, so that's, I think, one more insight that we can add to this. So yeah, this is mostly addendum, but I do think it pushed the analysis farther. I think both, at least, definitely Rav David Zvi Hoffman and Rav Hirsch are just brilliant in terms of their reads of what they add to this. So yeah, okay, next week I think we'll start on the crazy, I don't know if it's next week. I forget when you have Hanukkah off. You'll have to remind me. Because next Thursday is already Hanukkah. Oh, no, not next Thursday, right? I think